Hey team, you're about to experience my interview with Rohit Mahaswaran. Rohit is the co-founder of LifeSight. LifeSight is a marketing analytics platform for e-commerce and omnichannel merchants. It's a unified marketing measurement platform, and it allows marketers and brands to make better decisions around their marketing spend based on universal attribution, MMM or marketing mix modeling, and incrementality testing that gives brands insights in ways that they can't get any other way. We had a fantastic conversation, and I think you're going to enjoy it. This is the E-Commerce Edge podcast with your host, Jason Greenwood. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the pod. It is my fantastic pleasure to welcome Rohit Mahaswaran from LifeSight to the pod. Welcome, Rohit.
Thanks, Jason. Great to be here.
It's awesome to have you along for the ride today, man. We were talking off air that you've lived in a few places around the world before you got to New York, right?
Yes.
You're an OG digital nomad.
I am. I've been a serial entrepreneur for 20 years, originally from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. And we lived in Singapore, Jakarta, and now more recently in New York. Yeah.
It's near and dear to my heart, having been born and raised in the States, lived in New Zealand for almost 30 years, and now living in Mexico, but on business travel in the U.S. right now, currently in Phoenix, then going to California and Nevada. Yeah, the digital nomad life, we're pretty lucky to be able to live this life where you can work from anywhere. This is a fantastic time to be alive in the world, isn't it?
Absolutely. Can't wait to do more countries. Mexico is probably on the list next.
When you come down, man, the first round of margaritas are on me. So definitely look me up. But listen, mate, it's awesome to have you on the pod today. And we're going to talk about LifeSight, which is your, in all transparency for the audience, I've never used LifeSight before. But as I understand it, it's a marketing management or ROI management platform. Also seems like maybe it has some CDP-like characteristics in it as well, all combined into one marketing platform. Yeah. But before we dig into LifeSight and what it does, you know, as I look back across your career and almost all the technology you've been involved in, you've worked in product. You've been like a CPO, you know, you've been in charge of product development, product road mapping, product lifecycle management, pretty much throughout most of your career. So what drew you to product and technology and the nexus of product and technology?
Yeah, ever since I've been doing this for more than 20 years. So the start of the early 2000s, the internet started up, obviously. And I started building websites, started my career as a trained designer, product designer. And so that has always been the core. So I'm not really an engineer by trade. It's more of a designer side of things. But that was like the intersection between creativity and technology. And that fits well in SaaS tools, where you want to provide a very good user experience and as well as then provide a lot of great functionality. And so that kind of morphed from building websites into building SaaS apps, and then continued to then do a lot of mobile app development in the early days of the iPhone. And then, yeah, more recently with this company, we've been very much in the data and analytics space, as well as setting up data platforms end to end. And so, yeah, so that was pretty much been a passion of mine to come up with solutions to problems from day one. And digital products was the great avenue for that. And that's how I've built my career over the past 20 years. Yeah.
And I'm guessing that you discovered pretty early on that building digital products was faster, easier, you could iterate quicker versus building physical products, right?
Absolutely. You can make all the mistakes you want and you can really iterate and break things quick and get things going, shipped faster as well. And of course, your audience is the world, right? You've got an entire world of people who can sign up for your products. We've made a lot of mistakes in the past, but the beauty of it is that it's very easy to get your product to market and get people to start using it and then start monetizing it as well, which is something that we really put a lot of focus on. Yeah,
it makes sense. And you've been doing this for over 6 years over at LifeSight as the co-founder and CPO. But what specifically were you trying to solve for? Because this is, when we look back at the beginning of your platform and your technology, this was pre-cookie apocalypse, right? This was pre-iOS changes. This was pre the Armageddon of marketing data being, now a lot more things in the marketing space are happening in a vacuum. Yeah. And there's a lot of technology being introduced, even over the last couple of years, that have tried to plug those gaps more than ever before. So there's a lot of marketing attribution platforms out there today. There's a lot of marketing measurement and analytics platforms out there today. There's more CDPs out there today than ever before. Yeah. You know, they're getting massive amounts of funding. Klaviyo's trying to become a CDP now. It feels like everything is converging on this place where brands are asking themselves, we know that only 20% of our marketing is working, but we don't know which 20% or whatever that saying is about marketing spend. Yeah. And everybody's trying to identify which channels and which spend on those channels, organic, paid, performance, et cetera. How do we know where our marketing dollars are actually returning the best ROI for us? And where should we continue to double down versus either stop spending or dramatically reduce spending to make sure that we're getting our marketing spend allocation right? How are we tracking? How are we measuring? How are we reporting? Because at the end of the day, CMOs don't like going to boards and saying we're using a spray and pray approach to marketing. You're never going to see a CMO say that to a board, but in many cases, that's actually what they're doing.
Absolutely, absolutely. If we just take a quick look into recent history, obviously we were born in the golden era of marketing measurements, where everything was identifier based, mobile advertising was thriving, and so that mid 2010s, the idea came out for LiveSite in terms of how do we build a data company that will help marketers achieve the better outcomes, right? But of course, I've been born in the world of attribution. And if we take a little bit look into the past as well, obviously, advertising and marketing has been working from the start of the century, where people started advertising and then there was no digital advertising then, but still it works, right? So everyone knows it works, but how do you measure the effectiveness, right? And the digital age, of course, disrupted the traditional status quo, where people were using MMMs, for example, marketing mix models, statistics and econometrics as well to gauge the effectiveness of marketing. But digital age brought about this golden era of individual user level tracking that has disrupted the entire status quo. And everybody shifted their focus to that kind of measurement because it made so much sense, right? Marketers could put one and one together and they knew exactly that someone clicked on something and someone bought something after that. And then all the offline channels like TV and radio were put aside, right? Out of home media. They were just shelved as a spend that has to be done for brand awareness, but the real money is in performance and short-term gains, right? And that, I believe, was one of the biggest mistakes the marketing industry has ever done in its entirety, right? But it started our business, right? And so we started off by building, as you probably have heard before, identity graphs, being able to connect the dots between PII data versus digital identifiers versus offline data, like home addresses, postal addresses, and all that. And then, of course, being able to then reach across all the media channels, right? Digital, offline as well, and so on and so forth. And so that's where LiveSite's name came about as well. It's in the name. We're giving marketers a view into the consumer's lives, without violating their privacy of sorts, by being able to reach and measure them in a more effective manner. So that's the start of the company. But as we saw with 2018, roughly where GDPR came about, you then had iOS 14.5 come about, and then all the recent flurry of privacy tech and regulations has completely disrupted that status quo now, right? So essentially a huge reset button has been pressed. And the giants who were born in this period, like Google and Facebook, are starting to suffer the effects of that, right? Because they themselves are the ones who have instilled this mindset of tracking individuals, and the platforms are built around that, and they're all about tracking conversions in that way. And so, yeah, what we're seeing today is a huge shift into probabilistic modeling again, right? Going back to the old days, bring back the old tunes, right? And basically start leveraging some of the newer tech like cloud and AI technologies to improve some of the older methodologies, right? So it's advanced way ahead from what it used to be. There's what standard regression modeling is now way more advanced than what it used to be. And now we can start applying some of these methodologies to essentially help marketers triangulate to the truth, right? It's no more a one-to-one match. And so instead of doing a deterministic match, you're using a probabilistic model to essentially arrive at what you call true marketing effectiveness. And when I say true marketing effectiveness, it's not just driving conversions and looking at vanity metrics. It's about really measuring incremental revenue or incremental profits that are truly going to contribute to sustainable growth in a business.
I think it's pretty all, it sounds very all-encompassing. And when I think back across some of the guests we've had on the podcast before, we've had Mutinex before, which is very much a platform, marketing mix modeling platform for the digital age. We've featured Klar, we've featured Store Hero, we even featured Northbeam on the platform, and we've featured quite a few. That's just some of them. We've featured Wicked Reports. We've featured a few different companies that take a slightly different approach. Every one of these companies, similar to you, their whole reason for existing is trying to allow marketers to identify where their best money is being spent, where their money is working the hardest for them and is generating the best ROI, which doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to then can every other channel and every other route to market. They're not going to necessarily kill that off and say, oh, meta ads are driving the best ROI, so we're going to kill everything off. Everything else that is not a meta ad, we're going to eliminate spend. I don't think any marketer is going to do that. But what they do want is a situation where they at least have some directional insight. Even if it's not 100% accurate, at least if they can better understand the trends and each channel's performance relative to each other, I think if they can do that, then it allows them to at least make an informed decision. And if they say, look, this channel isn't necessarily driving the same amount of ROI, but it's reaching into target markets we can't get to any other way. It's reaching into a demographic, or it's reaching into a segment of our customer base or our potential customer base that we just can't get in front of any other way. Therefore, that spend continues to be justified, but at least we understand that it has to be a longer term play because of the fact that we're not going to get ROI in the first 12 months. Maybe we know that the LTV of this particular segment is massive, but the CAC is significantly higher as a result in this particular channel. Whether that be Reddit ads, whether that be Pinterest ads, whether that be, there's so many digital channels, whether that be, now we're looking at retail networks and retail ad networks, and we're looking at so many different channels. And a lot of marketers, especially digitally native marketers that are starting out today in the world of digital marketing, sometimes they have this mistaken idea because they grew up in the world of Meta and Google. Sometimes they have the mistaken idea. These are really the only two true performance channels that we can work with today. But then you layer on Amazon, both organic and paid marketing. You layer on so many channels and so many opportunities out there that it must be quite bewildering if you're a marketer today to know how and where should I spend my money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's exactly what you just said, which is the marketers were born in this era of digital advertising, right? And they forget that marketing is a team sport. You've got your brand marketers, you've got your lifecycle marketers, everyone else also doing their role in driving that bottom line. And it's been trained or ingrained in them that, no, my target is my ROAS on digital channels. That's it. And so it's a broken system, if you think about it, the grand scheme of things. And I think this is where things are starting to change, right? This is where this privacy limitations have started to force people to think out of the box and really realign how they do things, right? And what we are seeing today is this combination of, obviously, if you look at a bigger picture, short-term goals are very different from long-term goals, right? And the ability to spend on brand marketing effectively as well versus just on short-term tactical kind of campaigns is something that decisions need to be made, but collectively together. And so, so we see the secret sauce or the best possible combination of tools is the fact that you first build out an MM model, right? A marketing mix model, which is now being marketized of sorts. You don't have to have a marketing scientist on your team, or you don't have to have a data scientist on your team to execute that, right? And of course, we've got all these specialists like agencies and consultancies who do it for their living. And now they're seeing that they're also using all these open source tools and platforms out there. And then, of course, you want to validate, or you want to bring your marketing mix model closer to the truth, right? And so you do experiments that can then enable you, like geo experiments, for example, that enable you to then calibrate your model closer to the ground truth, right? And so that then gives you a good strategic tool to basically be able to distribute your budgets accurately. And of course, then multi-touch attribution is still in play, right? It's not completely useless, right? You can still use it to do campaign optimization and stuff like that, but you want to do it in a blended way, right? You don't want to do it in silos. You don't want to only trust the in-platform tools out there, right? And another methodology we're seeing as well is causal inference, which is basically a tool, a quasi-experimentation tool that allows you to basically do experiments when a geo experiment is not possible, right, in many cases. And so, yeah, so combination of these tools and methodologies help you do budget optimization, campaign optimization. And of course, from a strategic level, you can also forecast and do scenario planning and stuff like that as well. And then finally, being able to analyze the traction that has happened from all of those decisions you've taken across your optimization activities, right? And of course, you mentioned CDP earlier, the data foundation is important as well, right? We've noticed a lot of brands trying to adopt some of these more advanced strategic tools without taking care of the basics, which is being able to move your events on server side through to all the ad platforms and also then be able to do a special segmentation or AI-based segmentation, right? Predictive segmentation, and be able to target those folks on all the ad channels. And so there are a lot of groundwork activities. So that's where we have our data platform as well to execute on that as well, right? In the long term, we see this entire full funnel optimization happening, everything from acquisition right down to lifecycle marketing or retention optimization. And that's something that is truly exciting, right? When you can really do your end-to-end marketing decisioning without having to work in silos, right? Yeah.
It sounds like the platform is pretty darn comprehensive. So you do all of the... So can a marketer, through your lens, do you believe that a marketer can do all of the current and forecast analytics as well as the customer segmentation, lifecycle marketing, retention marketing? Do you believe that they can do, and also remarketing for that matter, because of course, what we would ideally like to have is we would ideally like to have a CDP that has all of the enriched data, all of the behavioral data, all of the purchase history, all of that stuff. We'd like to know what all of that is across every channel, right, that they have interacted with us through or discovered us through. And we want to be able to understand the full, as much as we can, because there is some, it is a bit of a dark art in terms of especially multi-touch attribution. It is a bit of a dark art. And do we look at last touch? Where do we do the weightings around each channel? Because very rarely does a customer just simply, for example, see one ad, click one ad, come to our website and convert on the same day that they saw the ad. There's usually more than one channel that they have to be exposed to us through before they make a purchase, before trust is built, before trust is earned. And so as I understand it, you would say that you are able to be an all-in-one source of truth for a marketer about their customer, and you don't just pull data in from those marketing channels, but you also can push data back out in terms of segments, remarketing segments, etc. Now, so it sounds like you're a CDP, marketing analytics, and attribution platform kind of all rolled into one. You've got multiple different models that you track these customers through to effectively backtest to say, okay, maybe our models said this and said this is likely to happen. If we adjust spend on this channel, this is what we are likely to see based on historical trends. When we move these levers, this is what we're likely to see the outcome to be. But then you also backtest that against the actual outcomes that you're seeing from, say, for example, performance marketing, some of the organic marketing that you're doing, et cetera. And you say, okay, there's a divergence here, maybe a divergence of 5% or 10% or whatever it is by channel. And you're saying, well, look, one informs the other. The marketing mix modeling helps you to forecast, okay, we should probably make some adjustments here moving forward. But then once you've made those adjustments, you want to backtest that and say, did it do what we thought it was going to do or not? And then that also helps to refine the weightings in the model as well. So it feels almost like a virtuous cycle. You're taking, okay, we have to do prediction. We have to do modeling. We have to do forecasting so that we can try to adjust our spend in advance of the market actually moving. But we also have to be grounded in the reality of what's happening. Okay, is it actually moving the needle in the way that we thought it was going to? And then finally, we need to create the segmentation, and we need to create the comms strategy, because once we've acquired a customer, we're probably going to do email marketing. We're potentially going to do SMS marketing to them. We're potentially even going to do direct mail to them as part of our lifecycle management. So there's a lot of moving pieces here. Absolutely. And as I understand it, your platform can do all of that, except maybe the direct email piece. So I don't think you're a mail delivery platform, but you integrate with the mailing platform so that all the segmentation can be done in your platform. Those segments are integrated with something like a Klaviyo for the actual email send portion and lifecycle marketing portion.
That is right. So all the activation pieces are all still with the respective platforms, whether it might be Klaviyo or Attentive or even Facebook, Google, and so on. But yeah, the name of the game is continuous marketing measurements and optimization, right? That's where we sit. That's where our sweet spot is. And you can't be continuous if you don't have an underlying data platform, right? If you look at traditional, for example, the brand is handing over a whole bunch of CSVs to the consultant, and the consultant is taking it and then going to work and then coming back with an answer, and then the budget is set for the next quarter or year, whatever it might be. And that's broken in today's world, right? Because consumer behavior moves so rapidly. New media channels are changing so fast. New ad formats are coming out. Macroeconomic conditions change all the time. Wars start happening. Name it, right? Pricing changes, all of these things. And so the data layer is a critical and absolutely extremely critical foundation that has to happen, right? Now, of course, in the data side, there's aggregated data, and then there's individual level data, right? If you're talking about tracking the brand's website, we have an SDK setup. You can install a Shopify app. You can do a manual integration, and all of those events flow through, either identified or not, through into the platform. And then we track every last event, right? That's for our attribution to work in a specific way. And then, of course, we got the aggregated data coming through from all the ad platforms and marketing channels and so on and so forth. And so, and then of course we have third-party data, which is where you have all of your external data sets, right? So pricing data from your competitors, how many, the weather, you know, any GDP changes, unemployment rate, whatever, so many kinds of other data sets available out there in the market that is then ingested as well, as part of the data that sits within this data warehouse, right? So we can either connect to a company's data warehouse and then run the modeling on it, or we can bring that data into our platform in order to do it, right? So that's like a flexible model there. But in essence, what comes out of that is a lot of predictive capabilities. So being able to do custom your RFM segmentation, build out all of your propensity models, and then do your calculate your likelihood to churn, your LTV, and all of that good stuff, and then be able to then activate some of all of that into the ad platforms or activation channels, right? So that's your optimization layer basically in its core. But all of that data sets as well, or insights from that data, comes into the models, right? And so that's when we run all of our measurements layers, where we are either doing attribution, causal inference, or experimentation as a measurements layer. And then finally, the analytics layer, or what we call the analyze tool, where you're really analyzing the traction and following the progress of all the activities and actions that you've taken across the board based on the measurements that you've done, and then be able to track that in a loop, in a feedback loop, based on the data that we collect again. And the fresh data is now being fed back into the model, and it's continuously improving the model as well. It's informing your next decisions as well.
And how are you operating, or how has the death of third-party cookies and iOS privacy changes, how has that, because you originated before all of this started to become a discussion. So has it started to hinder your tracking ability, particularly source tracking in particular? Has it started to hinder with Apple bringing proxies to the table for emails and not automatically opening images, basically, you know, in emails in particular being rendered useless. There's a lot of technology. I'm a bit cynical in the sense that I don't think Apple or Google or Meta care one iota about privacy. I think they couldn't give a shit less about privacy. This is all about how can we increase our walled gardens? How can we protect our data? How can we collect data from you for free and then monetize that data by selling it back to you and selling it back to marketers? So I'm extremely cynical about these big companies. I'm extremely cynical about things like GDPR. I think programs like GDPR actually reinforce the strength of big tech. They don't weaken it, regardless of how you might feel about any of that stuff. And even for people that think it's the best thing since sliced bread and a privacy first world is like the second coming of Christ, regardless of where you fall on that spectrum, the reality is that big tech has access to more data than any individual marketer ever could. When we think of even simple platforms like single sign-on through Google or single sign-on through Meta, the reality is the amount of data these guys are collecting just through their single sign-on networks is just mental. It is phenomenal, and it is kept current by constant engagement and usage of their platforms. Even if I don't, you know, log into Facebook, or even if I don't have a Facebook account, but I'm using Facebook single sign-on across the web, Facebook has more information on me than I have on myself. Yeah. So the reality is there's now a situation where there's the data hoarders, as I like to call them, have so much power that it feels like we become more powerless over time. So from a technical perspective, how are you guys dealing with these privacy changes?
Yeah, I think the main thing is what you just mentioned with regards to the power is with the first party data, right? Getting that consent from directly from the customer is key. And that's, of course, how they've built their giant businesses, right? And of course, that's also the message that is going down to the brand now. Stop paying the giant stacks and start collecting your own data and using your own data. So that's where we come in, right? So just like any other CDP of sorts, it's all about helping the brand collect their own data. So when we say we track websites, we track mobile apps, it's all about helping them collect the data and put it into their own storage rather than using it for our own benefit, right? And so, yeah, so when it comes to tracking, there's not much of effect right now, purely from the fact that we're tracking it from a first-party data perspective, and it's meant to be used by that brand alone, right? But we do have third-party data sources that we work with, or data providers, and from them, the sources are definitely diminished, right? So definitely from the start of IDFAs being lost when it came to iOS 14, as well as now just pure third-party cookies diminishing in across Chrome, Safari, and all of the platforms, right? And so addressability and reachability is still a big issue. And so, yeah, so I think regardless of what you say about first-party, the brand can only collect so much first-party data. Obviously, e-commerce people, businesses have an edge over everyone else rather than a retail brand. And so there's a whole bunch of other methodologies that need to come into play to leverage other people's first-party data and reach the audience that you want to reach, right? So yeah, the name of the game is being able to support this privacy movement, however it might change, and to future-proof yourself, right? And future-proofing means doing your own data collection as well as leveraging probabilistic modeling for a lot of your needs when you can't get access to first-party data like how you want to, right? And so yeah, so that's what we see.
And I think that not only first party data, but also it feels like zero party data is probably the holy grail, right? Like we can track especially authenticated users. If they come to our website and they log in, they authenticate, they create an account, even if they don't immediately make a purchase, even if they make infrequent purchases, once they're authenticated, we know who they are. We can track their behavior. We know which pages they visited, how long the dwell time was, what actions they took from those pages. Did they add products to cart, to wish list, to product compare? Did they abandon carts? Did they make purchases? We know a lot about them just through behavioral modeling, right? Yes. And then we take wisdom of the crowd and we align that with that behavioral modeling, and we can we can create some reasonable predictions about what that buyer is likely to do. And we know, hey, look, if they're a fashion shopper and 85% of the products they buy are red, it's a pretty good idea that they like red stuff, right? And therefore, when we present to them and we personalize to them, we want to heavily market our red new drops to them because it's a high likelihood they're going to buy. So there's some fairly simplistic modeling that can be done. And it can be fairly accurate because humans being humans, we follow certain patterns. And so therefore that works really well, especially when a customer chooses to take an action with the intention of giving us the ability to sell to them better. So zero party data, from, in my opinion, is the holy grail of data, even beyond first party data. Yeah. Because if they go through a quiz on our website, say for example, if my wife's on a hair care website and they put her through a quiz where they say, what's the color of your hair? What's the texture of your hair? What have you done to it? Has it been permed? They ask 100 different questions around her hair before they recommend maybe a coloring product or a maintenance product or a hair health, whatever it might be. Yeah. That data then can be stored as customer attributes against her profile that can be used over and over again. Every single time she comes to the website, she provides the information once, but the experience then can be tailored forevermore unless something changes about her situation that she needs to update the website about. They can continue to tailor her experience indefinitely, is what I'm saying. And what is your, it's great to be a measurement company and it's great to be a predictive analytics company, but I'm guessing as part of your engagement with a customer, a merchant, I should say, that this is a journey for them too. In other words, you say, okay, with your current setup and with your current systems and with your current processes, this is what we can do today. However, if you were to add X, Y, and Z either to your stack or to the experience up front, we would be able to add these 4, 5, 10, 20 data points, which is going to make our performance of our platform even better. So is it a case of, hey, this is not just a plug and play solution that is a dumb solution that, hey, this is just going to unlock all of this benefit for you? It's a journey for the marketer too, right? They need to enhance their own understanding of the data that they're trying to collect and why, and better understand gaps in their data sets and how they can effectively go about plugging those gaps over time. So I'm guessing there's a lot of consultation involved in your engagements. It's not just a one and done scenario, right? Hey team, I have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening.
Yeah, for sure. I think, yeah, what when it comes to collecting zero-party data and be able to enrich the user's profile in a much deeper manner. Obviously, we can support that. However, it's not really a main focus when it comes to media spend optimization, for example, right? But it'll contribute a lot to lifecycle marketing, to CRO activities, on-site activities, and all of that. And so, yeah, so definitely the optimization, marketing optimization, it takes a different route there. But definitely from a data collection perspective, we definitely tell all our brands that work with us to collect as much relevant data as possible to ensure that you're able to then predict and segment in a much better way, right? And so that you're able to then increase, obviously, your conversion rates, provide a better user experience and other things like that. And so, yeah, so the more the merrier is good when it comes to first-party data.
Absolutely. And when you go in and you first start working with merchants, what are the typical problems you see? When you first start to work with someone and you onboard them into the platform, what are some of the common mistakes, common limitations, common challenges that you face with kind of almost every engagement that you would say, hey, if marketers in general could fix these 1, 2, 3 things, they would make their lives a whole lot easier, whether they use our platform or not, regardless. They would be better marketers overall if they did these 1, 2, 3 things. What is something that you see just over and over again that breaks your heart as a marketing analytics platform?
I think the biggest issue is this extremely short-term view of marketing, right? People don't believe in, especially in e-commerce, the value of building a brand and thinking long-term. Obviously, the CFO is going to ask you, if you're going to spend 50 grand on building a brand, when am I going to see that returns? And you tell them 18 months, they're going to freak out. And so that alignment between the stakeholders, the executive teams, and marketing teams is one of the biggest things that we see is painful to see, because everyone's just all after short-term gains, and they don't realize that it's going to pay back multiple times more if they just invest a lot more in brand as well, right? But one of the biggest things then we see after that challenge is we do audits on their accounts, and we look at some of the things that they do, and they're obviously just spending based on what the platform is telling them to spend on, right? And none of these platforms are designed to target for incrementality. They target for conversions, right? And so this is where money is being wasted in a huge way. Specifically, for example, like search, branded search, we see a lot of money being put in there purely from the fact that it's generating the highest ROAS. And it's extremely painful to explain to them that, no, people are already coming to buy your product anyway. And some of these common mistakes and challenges that we see in convincing some of the marketers on this new way of approaching the problem and the new methodologies that they have and tools that they have on hand to solve it in a much better way, right? And to be able to then be accountable to the stakeholders and to be able to convince the CFOs in the next cycle of budgets that the money is really going towards incremental revenue as opposed to just chasing after vanity metrics, right? Yeah.
Yep. No, I see it all the time myself. And I don't even work in the marketing space, but I do see it a lot. And even when I'm consulting around replatforms, et cetera, oftentimes the question is, what is our ROI going to be on this? What is the negative ROI if you don't? That's the key here. I think we are in our industry, we're challenged to communicate opportunity cost. And that for me is one of the biggest things that I'm trying to communicate. What is the opportunity cost? Especially in the B2B space, which is the space I heavily play in. For a lot of merchants, they're going, we've never had e-commerce. We don't need e-commerce. We don't think our customers expect e-commerce. We have field sales reps. Why would we do this? And it's okay, let's play this scenario out. Let's war game this out a little bit. What if there was a competitor that came into your market tomorrow that was a digital native, that they only did e-commerce, and they scooped up all of your customers that are a younger demo, that are new to the industry. They do their digital natives themselves, and in their personal life, they shop through Amazon, they shop through D2C websites, and they want the same convenience in their day job where they're forced to do buying as part of their day job. And they want the same convenience in their professional life as they have in their personal life. What happens then? What happens if a competitor comes along that completely disrupts the entire industry and vertical that you play in? Yeah. Then what? You're going to be playing catch up from behind, and it's going to be very hard to win back customers that have been hemorrhaged to a competitor that is digitally native. Yeah. And so when you start to war game out some of these scenarios that are likely to be happening, and in many cases already are happening, whether they're aware of it or not, it's such an interesting thing how opportunity cost is not weighted as heavily as immediate ROI. And I think this is, to me, and what I'm seeing in the market, is it's that lack of understanding of opportunity cost that is hurting so many brands out there.
Yeah, I think we saw it early in the early days of D2C giants that came about, right? Everyone with the growth at all costs mindset and just burning cash, trying to get the next customer without really thinking about, am I getting a new customer rather than, someone would have bought anyway. And so, yeah, I think that's a great example of how not thinking about profitability and sustainability is a huge problem, right? And we see that all the time in e-commerce especially. And so, I think the market is changing. It's all for the better, I feel, that the free money is not out there in the VCs anymore coming to you, knocking on your door. And so I think this forces people to think this privacy first era plus the market conditions plus all other kinds of factors as well is starting to force marketing teams to think differently now. Yeah.
And when we think about the future of your platform, when you look out across you're a product guy, you manage product development life cycles in software companies. That's what you do. You decide what is priority, because you can't develop everything all at once. There has to be priorities for you. Yeah. And so when you look out across your platform and you look out to the future, say 12, 18 months from now, what are things that you want to add to the platform that you feel are gaps today? Or are there some things that your customers are asking for help with that your platform doesn't yet do? What's on your priority wish list for your platform?
So for us, we are putting a lot of effort now into what you call causal AI. Predictive AI has been great for in many scenarios in the past. It works for many situations. But the reality is, even the world's largest enterprises, failure rate on AI projects is about, I think, 70 or 80%. And none of them go to production. And the reasoning behind that is data scientists sitting in the enterprise crunching all these great models are not thinking about causality. They're just doing correlations. And so causal AI, I think, is the next big thing when it comes to marketing tech. And we're putting our full effort into it and essentially being able to tie in all of the different factors of influence, regardless of the type of business, regardless of what kind of different channels you use. You bring all of the data together, you build what you call a causal graph, and you're able to then essentially do causal inference, which is able to then inform decisions across all different factors of your business, right? So we are even talking about pricing optimization, supply chain optimization, and other deeper business decisions, all built into the same kind of model, right? And so that's where we see the future going, because even a large business cannot operate in silos, like marketing teams having their own AI models. And then you have the other teams, your manufacturing teams, doing something else completely detached, right? And so, yeah, so that's where we see the future going. And that's why we're building towards as well. And on top of that, of course, jumping onto the bandwagon of LLMs, the ability for anyone to ask any kind of question of the data is something that we're working on. But not only from just your basic, like, tell me what were my sales for the past 6 months, or which channels worked the best for the past 3 months. Not of the basic stuff, but ask what if questions, right? Ask what if I started my BFCM campaigns 1 month earlier instead of 2 months earlier, right? What would that change be like? What would that effect be for me when it comes to my profits, for example? And so really getting very complex into that side of the other side of the world. So combination of LLM and causal AI is where we see our platform going.
Man, that makes my heart sing. You have no idea, because I have been harping on about supply chain in particular and its impact on marketing performance and ROI on marketing. I've been harping on about this for literally years. And almost every single brand that I work with, it's such an interesting thing, because especially in the retail world, not quite as much in the B2B world, it's still a thing, but it's absolutely a massive thing in the D2C and B2C world, which is out of stocks kill performance. It's just that simple, especially in the top 10 to 20% of the products that you sell in terms of both volume, revenue, profitability, etc. If you are out of stock of those items at a high rate, your conversion rate will go down, your AOVs will go down, your LTVs will go down. Because when a customer comes to a brand, and let's say the brand has an average cart size of 3 items, whether that be SKUs or units, so 3 units, let's say the average sale is 3 units in a cart, right? The reality is, if they come to your website and even one of those items is out of stock, the statistics on abandoned carts at that point are through the roof, right? The reality is, a customer is, they're incentivized to buy more things in their cart to achieve things like free shipping thresholds, loyalty, getting value out of their memberships with your platform. There are so many things that incentivize larger carts. But then all of a sudden, when one or more items that they wanted to add to their cart to get all those things is out of stock, they won't just abandon that one product. They won't just remove that one product from their cart. They will usually go to another website where they can get, because there's the convenience factor at play. There is the optimization of shipping costs at play. There's so many things at play that marketers can bust their ass to get a customer to the website, and they can spend a lot of money to acquire that customer, but out of stocks will kill your conversion rate faster than almost anything else. And so if marketers are not bringing in supply chain and product availability data into their predictive models, they're missing one of the single biggest levers that is usually outside their control. They don't have any, they're not working, they're not a procurement specialist, they're not doing all these things that pull the lever of product availability. They usually have very little input into that, and they are usually siloed out of those. And so I think maybe they give feedback, for example, on site search optimization, when they get a lot of queries for products that are not carried, then that can either be put into the NPD lifecycle or given to procurement and say, here's a list of products that we don't carry that we get queried all the time. Why don't you go and see if you can source these products? But that's usually where the interaction between marketing and supply chain ends. And I think until cross-functional teams are KPI'd in a cross-functional way, this is going to continue to happen. And it doesn't need to happen. And I think marketers and supply chain specialists within the business need to be working 100% hand in glove, because otherwise both teams are flying blind. And I'd love your thoughts in particular around this supply chain data, and particularly about average percentage of catalog availability and its impact on marketing performance.
Yeah, I think definitely availability is a huge factor, right? We're just talking about perhaps like D2C, for example, in this case, right? We're not even talking about all the other sales channels, like omni-channel guys who've got Amazon presence, who've got offline retail presence. They're advertising on retail media when the product is not in stock in the stores. So all kinds of craziness happens like that. And of course, if we look at a larger enterprise that is actually manufacturing the products, if anything changes in their product cost or manufacturing costs, that kind of throws everything off as well. And so, yeah, so that extreme, that connecting the dots between everything, I think is definitely going to be the future of how AI truly shines in this new environment. And I think when it comes to being able to then reallocate budgets on the fly when it comes to marketing budgets, and also alerting brands that they need to increase spend in certain places when there's more availability or more inventory and all kinds of other scenarios, I think is going to be the holy grail of being able to truly adapt on the fly when it comes to all the other factors of influence, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. And how do you guys make your money? How do you charge? Your SaaS platform, the brand doesn't have to host any of this data if they don't want to. Obviously, if they've already got a data warehouse, you can plug into it, et cetera. But you can host everything if the brand needs you to. Is there like a fixed fee? Is there tiers? Is it transactional based? How do you make you guys make your money? How do merchants know roughly how they're going to pay you for what you do?
Yeah, there are a couple of models, but the main model is where we charge based on a fixed subscription fee based on the amount of media spend that you do and the number of media channels that you have. So that is like the core model. But of course, if you're looking at data costs and stuff like that, platform hosting costs and all of that, there's some additional costs there involved depending on the number of events that you bring in and out and stuff like that. Yeah.
Makes sense. And look, I've really appreciated your sharing your insights from the trenches of marketing attribution, ROI, opportunity cost, helping brands understand what that opportunity cost looks like. It sounds like you've built an incredible platform, and it sounds like you've got some exciting things on the horizon in terms of AI and brands being able to access AI practically through your platform. I think that's a real key here, is that brands need to be aware that they're not going to go and implement AI 99% of the time, unless you're a Walmart or a Target or somebody like that. You're not going to be implementing AI directly into your solutions. You're effectively going to be renting via SaaS. You're going to be renting solutions that already have AI built into them out of the box and enhance the performance of those platforms. So I think that's a very good learning from our discussion today. Now, we're coming to the end of our time together, and this is where I love to turn over the microphone to my guests. I love to let them ask me one question, any question they like, personal or professional, totally open. Rohit from LifeSite, what is your question for me today?
So everything I've been talking about is in the B2C space. Maybe you can tell me about what's in store for the B2B space.
I'm probably even more bullish and more excited about the B2B marketing opportunity, particularly the B2B digital marketing opportunity, than I am even in the D2C or B2C world. And the reason for that is that the amount of enriched profile capabilities we have in the B2B world, because they are all known buyers. We know who they are. We know their behaviors. We track it over very long periods of time. By default, no concerns with privacy. They've chosen to fill out an entire application form. Usually they've applied for credit. We know everything about the organization. We know their monthly, quarterly, annual spend within reason. We can track that over time, and it becomes a very accurate predictive model. And the concept of marketing within B2B is almost anathema, meaning that we have sales within B2B organizations. We don't usually have marketing in B2B organizations. I've worked with even very large B2B organizations that are doing significant amounts of sales. We're talking in the tens and hundreds of millions of dollars in annual sales that do not have a marketing function in the business. They have a sales function in the business.
Yeah.
They have a sales and customer success and customer service functions, but they don't do marketing. And they don't think they need to do marketing. They don't see the value in marketing. They see value in relationships and the fact that they have field sales that go out and they basically do hunting for new accounts. So in the B2B world, we're not onboarding customers, we're onboarding accounts. And within those accounts, we have locations and we have individual buyers within those accounts. And so when we win a new customer in the B2B world, we are winning an entire account. And that is so in other words, the LTV of that account can be phenomenal. Yeah. And so I think that the B2B world still has a long way to go to better understand the marketing function, why it has value, and how it can make the sales function. Basically, it gives the sales function superpowers. And particularly when it comes to digital acquisition, because the new generation of B2B buyers, they're searching online first for suppliers. They aren't sitting in their ivory towers waiting for suppliers to come and knock on their door and say, hey, do you want to buy this widget from me? They're actively going out and they are finding suppliers and they are starting their search digitally. And unfortunately, it's still all too common in the B2B world for the e-commerce experience to be completely gated. You can't even see what products they carry until you authenticate. And this is an incredible lost opportunity, in my opinion, in the B2B world. I'm not saying you necessarily need to completely ungate the experience and show prices, show inventory availability, all that sort of stuff, but at least having the catalog be visible so that Google can even index those products in the first place so that people, when they search for the long tail of the products that you sell, so that they can even identify that you carry the product. I think that's the first step to fixing this problem for B2Bs. And the opportunity is just massive. And based on what I'm seeing out in the market, B2B is probably, especially from a digital capability perspective, they're probably about a decade behind B2C and D2C, but so is the tech for B2Bs. And all of this amazing marketing tech, all of this amazing search, personalization, merchandising, when we look across the pantheon of technology that is extremely mature in the B2C and D2C world, we don't have that same level of maturity in the B2B world yet. And so I think this is the new frontier for B2B is digitally enabled e-commerce for B2Bs. That is the growth rate in this over the next decade is going to be mind-blowing, in my opinion. Listen, Rohit, it has been fantastic speaking with you today. I'll put the links to your LinkedIn profile and the website in the show notes. But other than that, how do you like people to get a hold of you if they want to have a chat about all that we've discussed today?
Yeah, you can reach me on LinkedIn or otherwise you can email me at rohit@lifesight.io.
Rohit, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with me today. I can't wait to speak with you again soon. Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.